Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuckadelics? What the fuck nicks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. So I'm excited to tell you that we're setting up some live events for the release of Waiting for the Punch, Words to Live By from the WTF podcast. All right, here we go. New York City. I will be at the Barnes & Noble at Union Square Tuesday evening, October 10th at 7 p.m. That's the day the book comes out. So come by, hear me and Brendan do our thing. Get a signed copy of the book. It'll be great. Then San Francisco. Come see us as part of Litquake. We'll be at the New Mission Alamo Draft House. Same deal. We'll talk. We'll answer questions. We'll sign books. Go to litquake.org for tickets to that one. And we'll be announcing other events soon. Don't forget to pre-order your copy of the book, which now lets you enter the sweepstakes to win a Casper mattress or a luggage set from Away. Go to markmaronbook.com to pre-order and enter. Also, the new cat mugs are in. If you want to get a cat mug just like the ones I give to my guests, there's a new batch available from our mug guy, Brian Jones. They're available now. Go to brianrjones.com to get your mug. A very fine gift idea as well. You want a cat update? I can do that. Monkey is fine. He's a little beat up. I got to cut Buster's nails because Buster's beating up on Monkey and scabbing him up a bit. The old guy's taking some hits, don't really know what to do about it. I squirt the little fucker with the water, but now he's taken to that. So there comes a point where you have very little power over the insanity of a crazy cat. LaFonda's fine. He doesn't fuck with LaFonda because LaFonda's a tough little fucker. The outdoor guys are fine. Big Head seems to be coming around. I got no validation. I think I brought it up to you people once before. He's still got his balls and his head is enormous. Are those connected somehow? Sarah the Painter seems to think so. I'll believe her, but I'd like to know more. If you want to reach out, let it be about the existence of balls on cats and their relation to the jowls of cats who want to fuck. Angry too. He's fine. He's out front. I see him occasionally. So that's what's happening. Sometimes these days where I got to talk, I don't always know what to say, but I did get an interesting email. Subject line, Harry Dean Stanton, did he actually reveal more than you thought? I do not publicly express my feelings, as I've said, about my interviews anymore. We reposted that Harry Dean Stanton with the original intro, and that was one of the last times I really did that in terms of reflecting on the conversation. And this guy just said, hello, Mark, I'm a clinical psychologist and new to your podcast, and I listened with interest to your interview with Harry Dean Stanton. A great loss. Maybe I'm missing the point, and it was a journalistic device, but I thought you might have got a lot more out of Harry Dean Stanton than you thought. I think he told you what his underlying pain was. He told you that he always thought his mom loved his brother more than him. You can imagine what that would be like for a person, that your mom didn't love you. He then told you that he wasn't sure whether his mom had ever seen any of his films. You can imagine what that is like for a successful actor and son. And he also told you about the broken heart, which he mended and sent back to his mom towards the end of her life. Was he being metaphorical? Either way, a symbolic gesture. Anyway, get in touch if you would like to explore this further. Best wishes and keep up the good work. I don't consider myself a psychiatrist or a therapist or even a journalist, but sometimes I don't, you know, I can't put everything together when I'm sitting there listening to it, when I'm sitting there in the moment, in the present, talking and thinking and engaging. Not until afterwards can I do that. And then a lot of times I don't listen to these things afterwards. I don't listen to the conversations. Brendan listens to them because he's the one that puts the show together. But after I have him, I don't. So that was encouraging and nice to hear that a professional in the mental health business, or a professional at somebody making connections, which I do in the present, but he was hard for me, made those connections. So I don't know. I'm not tooting my own horn. I wasn't there to excavate, you know, Harry Dean's, you know, psyche. I was just there to have a conversation, which I, as I've said, I was a little tricky for me. But it was nice that was put into perspective and context. And now I feel better about it. That's a good psychologist. I should get in touch with that guy to see on a regular basis. I wonder what city he's in, because he just made me feel okay about what I do and my insecurities, and maybe I shouldn't have them in relation to that, which I don't occasionally. I'll tell you though, man, without the nicotine, without the caffeine and the coffee form, without, you know, I am a little raw. Did I mention that I have Pete Davidson on the show today? What a great guy. What a great kid. Can I say that? Great kid, that Pete Davidson. I can say that without being condescending. Compared to me, he's a kid. That's a hell of a talk we had. It's coming up here in a second. Oh, there's another thing. A while back, it must be years ago already, I had one of my favorite illustrators on, Drew Friedman. He is I would call him a satirist. He's done several books. And he's done amazing portraits of people. They're very disturbing and compelling. He's done a series of old Jewish comics books. Drew's got a lot of books out. But nonetheless, he did that portrait of me and a while back. And that in and of itself was an honor. But he has put the portrait of me in his new book called Chosen People, Drew Friedman's Chosen People. I am in the company of Frank Zappa, Howlin' Wolf, Muddy Waters, S. Clay Wilson, Jeff Ross, comic artist Chris Ware, Oliver Stone, Barbara Streisand. Who else is in here? So many. Pepitone's in here. Zero Mostel and Gene Wilder. Elaine May. Groucho Marx. These are... I love his portraits. Ernie Kovacs. Wow. Anyway, Kimmel's in here too. A lot of old comics, a lot of interesting choices. I'll tell you that. But thrilled and honored to be a part of the collection. Just telling you. He's got a picture of his dad in there. The brilliant dark writer, Bruce J. Friedman. So anyways, not a paid for plug, but I just wanted to put it out there that I am definitely honored to be part of that collection. It's one thing meeting your heroes. It's another thing to be drawn by one of your heroes. And then yet another thing to be put in his book. Right? That's right. Pete Davidson got pretty real with me here, and I really love talking to him. He's a sweet kid. Can I say that? It's not an insult, Pete. You're a good kid. You're a good guy. I like you. You're a good kid. He's a grown man. But he is part of the 43rd season of Saturday Night Live, which premieres September 30th on NBC with host Ryan Gosling and musical guest Jay-Z. And this is me talking to Pete Davidson in the garage.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Here. I am always amazed when people my age still smoke. Like, God bless them.
Yeah.
There's no way after a certain point with cigarettes where you don't feel like this is just killing me.
No, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Usually when I'm at night when you're watching TV and you're laying on your back and you're like wheezing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then for some reason it doesn't go away unless you smoke another cigarette.
Oh, God. Yeah. So are you going back and forth on the vape to the thing?
I quit cigs for like 3 months and then like I had one.
With nothing, though? You quit with nothing?
I was like, doing the vape.
Oh, you were doing the vape. Yeah. So you weren't off the nicotine.
No, I wasn't off the nicotine. But I had one at work, and then I was like, you know what? I'll just have another one tomorrow.
It's over.
And once you have one, it really is over.
You got the thing, though, then. You got the bug.
Oh, yeah. I do everything to the most extreme.
Yeah, and you just, like, there's no, right. Yeah. Like, if I think about drinking again, there's no sort of, like, I'm going to just have a beer here and
go
there.
Go right back in there.
Oh, fuck yeah, man. When I think about having a beer, I'm like, why not do that every day?
Right.
Wait, why would you not do it every day?
Right.
Weed, same thing. Why would I not do it every day?
Why not?
I know. That's the way the brain works, so I just have to
stop.
And then
you're like, I get my stuff done.
Yeah, right, you know? Kind of.
But, like, we can do that because we do this.
Yeah, you got a little more space. But then you start to wonder, it's like, am I doing all the stuff I could be doing? Right. Eventually, with weed, though, I don't know, like, what your experience was with it. My brain is very active, and, like, my perception, I feel good and everything. But I don't know. I start to feel like I'm detached from real life, you know, like, from... Like, you know, you wake up, you're like, I don't know if I'm still high. Am I still high? And then you get high, and you're always like one step to the side of everything, which is nice.
Yeah.
If you want to observe like that.
But sometimes you just want to be like on.
Right.
Yeah. And you can't because you're like stuck.
Yeah.
For like days.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I used to smoke weed every single day, all day for 8 years.
8 years.
Until like last year.
When did you start that? How old are you now?
I am 23.
Oh, so you're like you're young. Yeah. So when you were like in 15 or something?
Yeah, I was like 16 and I started smoking weed because I just didn't have any friends. And then I got invited to this party because I was around because I lived around the corner.
Yeah.
And I was like actually around when the person invited another person. And I've never been invited before. So I was just like, fuck it, I'm going to go. And they were all like 20 years old and I was like 16 and they were smoking weed. And I was like... I became like their little man.
Yeah, yeah.
Hung out with them for a while.
So I get the cat stoned.
Yeah, that's how I made friends.
Let's get Pete stoned.
Yeah.
That's funny, man. That's the worst feeling when you kind of get invited to something just because you're there.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to come? Yeah, you can. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, when I was like 16, I'd never been invited before. I was like, fuck it. I'm going to go. And then I got caught when I got home because I was wearing sunglasses.
Oh, yeah. That's a giveaway. Pete.
Yeah. At 10 o'clock at night.
When you're a teenager, you come home wearing sunglasses.
I came home wearing sunglasses.
You're almost like asking.
Yeah.
You're like advertising. Who caught you? Your mom?
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know the whole history of you. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Staten Island, New York.
Yeah. Okay. See, that's like, you got to tell me some shit about Staten Island.
Okay. It's a terrible place, Mark. It's no, like, everybody thinks I'm joking when it just because.
Well, that's the reputation it gets. You're not surprising anybody. Nobody's saying, like, oh my God, I thought Staten Island was a vacation island.
I told my girlfriend this the other day.
You guys are together still?
We're together.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right.
And I had, like, this realization. I was, because, like, I always thought there was something wrong with me.
Right.
My whole entire life. I was like, I have no friends. You know, I've been to like three different schools. Everybody hates me.
Uh-huh.
Everybody hates me. Nobody likes me.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be me.
Right.
And then I left Staten Island and I was like, it was literally everybody else.
Really?
It was everybody else.
It was so you mean everyone hated Staten Island?
No, I just think I just think it was a bad place.
I see.
Like, I always thought there was something wrong. There is something wrong with me, but like, I was like, it can't be everybody.
Right,
like,
right.
Every single person hates me.
So it was unique to Staten Island that everybody didn't like you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, everybody there's a Trump person.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Right.
It's the only red place in New York.
Well, my feeling of it was the only other guy I know from Staten Island is Eddie Pepitone.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in New York, you know, of course, everyone knows the dump is there.
Yeah.
But then there was like this, you know, you just thought like, well, a lot of like mafia there and there's a lot of cops there. It was this weird place where it was just sort of like, you know, criminals and cops and just, you know, alpha monsters roaming the streets with the dump in the background. But who are the people? Why were you there? Was it your family from there?
My whole family was born and raised.
Your grandparents?
Yeah, very. Well, they moved to Jersey like later on, like in their 50s. Right?
To get out, they moved to Jersey. That's how bad Staten Island is. To get out, you go to Jersey.
That's like the dream of a Staten Island family. Like one day we'll retire.
To the shore?
Yeah, and move to Jersey.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can, you know, Jersey's nice. I can't badmouth Jersey. I've grown. Because it is part of my past, and my grandparents are there. I spent a lot of my childhood there. And
yeah, me too.
And it's nice. I mean, it's like, you know, it's very green. It's very lush. There was good fruit. I remember maybe that was just my grandparents. There was always a lot of fruit around.
No, not my...
Not your family?
No. A very Irish, very unhealthy family.
Well, Did they have stories of when Staten Island was great?
I don't know. What they loved it. Everybody from Staten Island that's lived there and still lives there seems to love it.
I guess it's a like-minded thing.
Yeah, like my friends, like my group of like people.
Yeah.
Like my age group,
yeah,
are the first ones I think to start to realize that it kind of sucks. Because I was...
You're the generation?
Yeah, I remember being... I'm like... I remember,
once everyone got pictures of other places?
Yeah.
Like, once the internet happened, you're like, oh, look.
No, yeah. Once, like, I think it finally... This, like, Trump thing, I think, really fucked everybody
up. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think it really, like, separated a lot of families. And
oh, yeah?
People look at people differently.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. On, like, a intellectual type thing.
Well, I'm not sure what it's going to take to get people to turn on this guy, but some people are.
It's like ridiculous.
Yeah.
The whole family.
There's the commitment to like, well, I think those type of New Yorkers, I don't know. They just, they'll let him off the hook for everything because they like his attitude.
Right.
It's a very specific type of New York bigot.
No, yeah. My family's the type of people that are like, oh, he's hilarious.
Right. Right. You know? Right. And also they're like, fuck them.
Yeah. They're like, no, yeah, fuck them.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
They like it.
Yeah.
I think it's exciting.
Right. It's got nothing to do with policy or lying or
it's all swag.
Yeah. It's swag and bigotry.
Right.
And there's a, there's definitely a certain type of like Queens, I imagine Staten Island racist guy
right.
that everyone knows.
Yeah.
Like, so he's like most of those people
yeah.
of that generation.
He speaks to them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an old New York type. It's just, I'm just sort of surprised at what surprises me most about him is just how the sort of, right wing Christians have latched onto him because they're, this is their window. So they're like, we'll make a deal with literally Satan.
Right.
to meet our agenda. I've never seen a more satanic guy, just a charming guy that never speaks a word of truth. And, he's completely morally bankrupt. And people are like, I love this guy.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's just the devil.
It's to the point where I don't even know what to say about it anymore.
It's hard to talk about.
It keeps going.
That's part of the plan, though, to get us all exhausted and frightened.
It's terrible.
It's working.
I can't think about anything else.
You can't?
It's just shoved down your throat.
You keep looking at the phone?
I just keep looking at it. I'm just like so cute. Just reading articles all day about something I can't do anything about.
That's right. The powerlessness.
I can't change anything.
Yeah.
But I'm so infatuated with all this information.
It's hard to filter because a lot of times it's the same article taken on by a bunch of different angles.
Right.
And then there's opinion pieces. Where right. I'm like, is this a real article? It's someone's point of view. Okay. Like, I have to differentiate because you just go by the clickbait. You just go by the headlines. You're like, fuck.
Yeah.
So Staten Island, so you're there. You're there in the weird darkness of Staten Island.
Yeah.
And, when you were growing up, what'd your mom do? Your dad was in the fire department when you were a kid?
Yeah, my dad was a fireman. And my mom was a nurse. Very typical Staten Island type of...
And she worked at the hospital in Staten Island?
She worked at the hospital in Staten Island.
Is she a nice lady?
She's a sweet lady.
Oh, good.
My mom's the best.
Okay, good.
Yeah, she's good. A very, very nice lady.
I don't like knowing that nurses are monsters.
No. No, there's good people in Staten Island.
Yeah.
It's just the whole...
The vibe.
The vibe and the aura of it is pretty awful. Something just seems off.
It just seems close to the museums.
Like, right, like, when The Walking Dead first starts and you go outside and you look around and it's just very desolate.
Yeah.
It feels exactly like that every time I get over the bridge.
And you know the dead people.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, there he is, the kid I went to high school with.
Still at the pizza place, still like 25 years old, still like, what's up? Pussy.
Yeah.
Oh, fucking come back home. They're all still like that.
Yeah. Well, what do you think's going to happen?
Staten Island is filled with people who peaked in high school.
Right.
That's what it is. It's still like this 17-year-old macho mentality that they carry through the rest. Yeah, I fucked that girl, got her pregnant.
Yeah.
And they're like proud. And
right.
Everybody has babies when they're like 19 and they start a family. And then they make those people like them.
Yeah, they're exactly.
And that's why it keeps getting worse. Most people that are born there don't leave.
Yeah.
Like they never go to the city.
Island people are weird.
Like
in general,
to the city, the first time I went, I was like, what the fuck is this place? This is insane. There's people selling hot dogs on the street.
How old were you?
I was fucking like 14 years old.
You were 14?
I mean, I went to the city like once or twice to see the tree or whatever.
Yeah,
but like, that doesn't, it just feels like a mom type trip.
Right,
like,
but as a separate kind of person.
I went by myself. I fucking flipped out. It was the craziest thing that's ever happened.
I can't believe it was that long.
No, it was incredible.
14?
Yeah.
Oh my! It's like you were like in prison.
Yeah, I've never been to Manhattan. I've been to like Brooklyn and like Staten Island, but that's pretty much it.
Why? Because you have family in Jersey.
My dad worked in Brooklyn Heights. That was where the firehouse was.
Oh, he was. Oh, that's so. Every day he had to go over there.
Yeah.
So when you were a kid, did you go to the firehouse and shit?
I went a bunch.
Yeah,
I really liked the firehouse. I thought it was sure, like really cool, and it was also like, you know, it was cool. You get to go down the pole.
Sure.
And, like, yeah.
And firehouses in New York are spectacular.
Yeah.
They're just so glorious.
It's really cool. And they're like little heroes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody loves firemen. So, yep. Yeah.
I mean, there's that one that used to, there's one down by the old, on 3rd Street, you know, that used to be right next to the Boston Comedy Club that I think that Anderson Cooper made into a condo. And then there's that one right on, like, you know, like at 3rd and like Bowery. There's a big, beautiful one. It's one of my favorite buildings in New York.
Oh, yeah, the ones down there are really nice.
They're just glorious. I mean, they're really old, I think.
Yeah.
So your dad was a fireman. Now, I guess most people know what happened, but what happened?
So he died 9/11.
Oh, right. So planes flew into buildings.
A plane flew into a building.
Yeah, right, right.
And then they were actually the first truck over the bridge.
Dad's truck was?
Yeah, because it was right next to the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
Because of Brooklyn Heights and
right.
So they were like one of the first people there. And then the whole firehouse was gone.
And how old were you?
7.
So you knew all these guys?
Yeah.
Like you'd go to the station house and
they were like my friends.
Yeah.
You know, you know, I was there all the time.
Oh, so fucking awful, dude.
Yeah, it was pretty rough. It's still a little rough.
Yeah. I don't know that you ever really fully get over something like that. So like you're 7, so you can barely process what happened.
Yeah, I know. All I knew was everybody started getting picked up from school.
Yeah.
For like.
In Staten Island. Yeah.
You know, and my dad worked and my mom was working. So like I was like one of the last people to get picked up.
Yeah. Who picked you up?
My mom picked me up.
Yeah.
And then I just went to, I think, my mom's cousin's house. And then she was like, you're not allowed to watch TV. She's like, no TV for you. So I thought I was in trouble.
Yeah.
I didn't know, like, what was going on.
Probably didn't quite know either, right?
No, nobody really knew until, like, a week or so, really.
But by the time you got picked up, both towers had fallen?
I'm pretty sure.
What a fucking time.
We were so nobody was telling us what was going on.
You're just a bunch of kids in a room?
We were just like, school's done. And we were all like, awesome. Like,
yeah.
Let's get out of here.
Yeah.
You know? I didn't really find out. I was just like, eventually, like a day or two went by from what I can remember. And I was like, where's dad? And
right.
Like, she had to explain. And my parents just got divorced at that point, like 6 months ago.
So you'd just been through that hell?
So it was just really rough then. And then it started to look like it was starting to get used to both sides. And then that happened. And then, like, you know, my mom was like, if he comes home, we'll get back together. It was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was fucked up. It wasn't really cool. And my sister was 3. So, like, it was like.
Oh, my God. So your mom said, like, you know, to sort of buffer it.
Yeah.
She said, if he comes back, we'll get back together.
Yeah.
Though hope was slim.
Yeah. She was probably deep in her mind, like, don't fucking be alive. I don't want to get back.
Oh, God.
No. No, but yeah, it was very.
What were they like together? Do you remember?
From what I can remember, I was set. So I have like a year maybe of memories. Like,
yeah.
I remember it in pictures. I remember a happy family.
Sure.
I don't remember. Once in a while, I would remember them fighting, and then I remember like hiding under my bed.
Yeah.
Maybe like a handful of times.
Right.
And then I just remember them being like, hey, we're not going to live together anymore. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't really
remember. Was he close by?
Yeah, he wasn't too far away.
Yeah. So that happened like a few months before the horrible thing?
That probably happened like, I would say 9 months the most. I don't remember.
So when your mom tells you this, that, you know, they're looking, is that what she said? That they're, you know, they're still looking for people? How's she framing
it? Right. She was like, yeah, we don't know. He could be under something.
And oh, right. Oh,
we
that's
were,
right.
At this point, we're just like, because they haven't found, they didn't find, they had a rough time finding people.
Yeah, so, right. There was weeks of that, you know, maybe there's still people alive in the wreckage.
Yeah. So there was like a rumor that like he was, there's a hotel in there or like some sort of a lobby there.
Yeah, right.
And he was allegedly seen helping a bellhop and a group of people.
Right.
I don't know if it was a bellhop, some sort of a bellhop type guy.
Yeah.
So we thought maybe he was like, trapped in a kitchen and it was like food everywhere and like
right.
He was just chilling waiting.
Yeah.
Wait, you make up a lot of shit
when you're a kid, huh?
Yeah. So
then when did it really sort of like sink in?
I don't remember, but I know it was like probably a week or two where we were just like everybody, you know,
devastated.
Yeah. And then and here's how shitty Staten Island kids are.
Yeah.
I still got picked on like the next day
and they knew.
Yeah.
Did they pick on you with that?
No.
Oh.
But just, they were just still mean, just still like, fuck this kid. Like, yeah, I actually had one kid be like, he actually became my friend for a little bit. And he was like, I'm inviting you over because my mom told me to, because your dad died.
That's how he put it?
It was in third grade. I was like, okay, I'll see you Friday after school.
That's fucking heartbreaking.
It was fucking awful.
Why did they pick on you to begin with? What was your particular vulnerability that they all decided to bully you?
I was funny looking.
Yeah.
I used to rip my hair out of my head.
Before or after?
After. Yeah. So, you know, I when I was in fourth grade, I was like bald. I looked like I had, you know. Like
from ripping your hair out?
Ripped all my hair out.
Do you know what compelled you to do that?
I don't know. It was just like a tick after that happened. I just couldn't stop.
Really?
Twirling and ripping my hair out.
What else? What other things happened, like physically?
I don't
remember.
I was in therapy a few months before it happened
because
I think
of the divorce,
like a family thing. Yeah. And then it just I just continued from
with
that.
The same guy,
same lady, and then just like when that happened, since all the kids were so young, I think like a lot of like one time these doctors from like Columbia like came over my house and like interviewed me, and I think they were doing like a lot of like research, maybe
studying the 9/11 kids.
Yeah. And they would ask me like really fucked up questions. They would like be like, do you think your dad's alive though? Like, do you think he's like out there?
Yeah, with that tone.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like, and I'm like, no, if he is, he's a dick if he's fucking hanging out there.
Yeah, yeah,
not coming home. But like, yeah, it was like a lot of like, I would go to like Cornell.
Really? They like, flew like a bunch of kids?
I assume. I know I had a really rough time. I don't know how anybody else really handled it, but like I would have to go all the way to the city to do like that.
Yeah.
So like it was...
Were there other kids in your neighborhood that lost their parents?
No, I didn't really know anybody until there was this 9/11 camp that they had.
Get out.
This is called America's Camp.
Really?
It was a camp for all the children who lost a parent.
Really?
It was fucking awesome, dude. It was sick.
How, like the year after or when?
Maybe 2 years after they started it, or
yeah,
a year after.
Right.
And then it went for like until everybody turned like 17. And
so you go every year?
I went for 5 years. I think my mom waited like 2 or 3 years to see because she was too like scared to send me. But then once you went and it was like just all these kids that are all pretty much the same age.
Well, that's sort of like amazing.
It was incredible. It was a really good time in my life, and I have a lot of good memories from that. And all the counselors, they come from all over the world. So, like, people from, like, Ireland, Wales.
Really?
Like, Welsh people and, like, people from England. Like, hardly any, like, Americans.
How many kids?
It was probably, like, maybe 200-300 in the camp.
Really?
I'm pretty sure.
That's, like, a beautiful thing.
Yeah, because, and then, like, my sister started going because she got old enough, and then we went together. Yeah, it was really, really sweet.
And it was just a regular camp? Did any of you guys, the kids, talk about it? I mean, was there any, like, did they, I mean, it was sort of hanging over the camp.
Yeah,
we all knew why we were there.
But, like, right. I think, like, one of the main rules was, like, don't,
yeah,
like, yay! Like shaking like something in your face. Like,
yeah,
here's ice cream or whatever.
Right.
So like, but there would be like moments where like at the end of the camp, like last night where they have like campfire or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, you know why we're all here? And they have like very nice like poems and people read stuff. And they had like Taylor Swift performed at our camp.
Really?
But she was like 15
right,
or whatever. Like, so they got people to come and play. And it was really nice.
Oh, that's a beautiful
thing. It could have been the worst fucking thing ever.
Yeah,
it could have been really bad, but
yeah, I guess it was really a matter of how it was run.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I how could it have been bad if everybody was just, you know, miserable? But your kids.
Yeah, I think they did a really good job at distracting people. And they had like this room called like the Volcano Room,
yeah,
which is just like a bunch of punching bags and like
really
could like smash stuff and like break walls and like.
And was that popular?
Yeah, it was very popular. It was always like, it would be funny if like kayaking, they'd be like, anybody want to go? We have 10 places.
Yeah.
And like Volcano Room would be sold out to like Thursday. With like a line around the corner.
Go hit shit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fucking beautiful. So
yeah,
boys and girls, all ages, I guess, up
yeah,
to what, 16, 17?
Up to 16, 17. And then if you turn 16, 17, you become a counselor.
But you didn't do that?
I did for like a year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, for like one of the last years.
And how did your sister, does your sister have any memories of this stuff? Did she process it differently than you? Or
I don't think she knows who the dude is.
Yeah.
To be honest
right,
with you.
Right, right.
But it definitely affects her, but I don't know if, like, me and my sister aren't really, like, the closest.
Right.
You know, like, since, like, I moved out and, like, we're kind of at that she's in college, I'm doing this type thing.
What's her four-year difference?
Four-year difference.
Yeah.
So, you know, we talk about it. Obviously makes her sad, but I don't know if it, like, if she, it's worse for her or better.
Right,
I
right.
don't know. I could see, like, the positives to both sides.
To not yet.
Because, like, you have a little bit of a memory. Personally, I would like to not know.
Right.
I wish I was in her position.
Like, you didn't know the guys at the firehouse.
Yeah.
You didn't know, you know, your dad. You didn't,
I would like to just start, no dad.
Yeah.
I would love to do that instead of watching. Because that, it kind of taught me what, like, death is.
Yeah.
And
too,
like,
too young in a way.
Yeah, that life could just be taken. You know, like, usually you get to high school, a couple kids, you know, kill themselves in their garage.
Yeah, right.
You know,
car accident.
Yeah, car accident. You kind of, like,
grandparent dies.
Yeah, you start, like, realize, you're like, oh, okay, we're not invincible.
Right.
But, like, right out the fucking gate.
And,
like,
something that global and that horrible.
It was, at the time, the biggest tragedy that's ever happened.
It still is in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, it's completely.
It's definitely top three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's right up there.
Yeah. Us tragedy people, we fight about it all the time at our meetings, but.
but you know, it's astounding. That camp story is just beautiful. I wonder whose idea that was. Do you know?
I don't know exactly whose idea it was.
Where was it?
It was in Massachusetts, on like a lake, a real camp went there.
Yeah.
And
it was what, for like 2 weeks, 4 weeks?
It was a week.
A week,
yeah.
It's phenomenal. And, like, all these people from all over the world, so you're seeing, you know, like, a global community around.
Yeah, it's just this whole group, just, and every counselor was just, like, incredible and, like, so sweet, and, like, there was no problems. It was really a great
That's
camp.
A great story.
Yeah.
So, like, as you go, so you're doing the camp every summer, but, you know, you're still in high school and you're still getting shit, and then, you know, what's playing out for you in high school around, in retrospect, that you can attach to, you know, the tragedy?
How am I doing in school?
Well, yeah.
I'm acting out a lot. In elementary school, I acted out a lot. I was, like, known as, like, a crazy kid.
Yeah.
You know, people would laugh at me and with me.
Yeah.
Like, I was a dude that would make someone laugh and then keep hammering away at the same thing and then not stopping.
And then everyone stops
And then
laughing.
Everyone eventually is like, dude, we're trying to, like, study. Like, you fucking, like, chill.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
It
was like, and then when I got to high school, I kind of was, like, quiet, and I started doing, like, these videos for the news channel in the morning for the school. I used to film the football team and then make, like, a highlight tape with, like, music in the background.
Straight up.
Yeah.
No funny.
No funny.
Right.
Like, just, like, hits, sync the music to the hits. Like,
so you're learning something.
Yeah, I was having fun, and then people were like, these videos are incredible, but nobody knew who I was.
Right.
And then once people found out who it was, they didn't like me.
Why?
I don't know. It must have been my fault. There must have been something that I was doing, because, like, I can't explain to you, like...
The resentment, like, you
I don't know what it was. I really don't. I mean, like, I was like, probably annoying? Yes. Yeah. Was I acting out? Yes. But I wasn't, like, a mean person or, like...
You were probably kind of, like, I think that from acting out, after a certain point, there's an annoying element to it, but then you realize the person's probably, you know, fundamentally insecure, needs attention, looking for something, so why not bully that kid?
Yeah, I don't know. I bet, like... Obviously, I'm the person you invite somewhere and you avoid.
Yeah.
At that time, you know?
But
I didn't
get,
like,
invited.
I had, like, one friend, you know, we would hang out. We wouldn't go out. We weren't invited places. We would just sleep over each other's houses and, like, watch TV and movies.
How's that kid doing?
He's good. He's
good.
I don't talk to him much, but we're still friendly.
Oh, good.
You know,
good,
he's very supportive and very nice.
Yeah. So when do you take the step to to perform, to actually perform, as opposed to just acting out, to act out with a context?
Yeah. Well, I was always a huge fan of comedy. Like, I saw Eddie Murphy Delirious when I was like 10.
On the video?
I got a DVD and my mom thought it was an Eddie Murphy movie, and we used to have, like, a one in the car.
Yeah.
One
yeah,
of those
yeah.
like Tahoes that have.
Sure.
So we were playing it and she was obviously flipping out. And
right. With the language and everything. Yeah.
But she was cool when she was like, you could watch it, like, at home.
Right.
Just, like, not around your sister. And I was like 10, so I was like, oh, fuck. All right, cool.
Yeah,
you know, so I got very into.
That's good. So she gave you a little a longer leash.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
She let me get away.
Kid's been through a lot.
Yeah.
Let him watch the dirty black guy.
Yeah.
And that planted the seed?
Yeah, then I just became like obsessed, and it was to the point where I could do the whole special.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then Dane Cook came out.
Yeah.
And I was like 13, yeah. 14. And
that was the MySpace. That was the time.
That was like the time. I've never even heard of like a comedian like albums coming out.
Right.
Like, you know, so yeah. He was a really big fucking deal.
Yeah.
To like, especially kids like us.
Yeah.
Like we would go nuts.
Right. On Staten Island.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody would lose their mind. And then when I was like 16, I was in high school.
Did you tell Dane that?
I did tell him.
How'd he take it?
Yeah. Well, he's, you know, he knows.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's a funny thing when you start meeting your heroes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You get to do that, right?
Yeah. You get to do that.
Did you meet Eddie?
Never.
Not yet?
Oh, I did. I met him once at an SNL thing. It was like right before the 40th anniversary special. And he was there. And I just went up to him. I was like, hey, man, just wanted to shake your hand. Like, just like,
yeah,
nice to meet you. See you later. And he was like, how old are you? And I was like, 20. And he's like, you're going to be just fine.
that's what he said?
Yeah, you'll be just fine. That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So he knew you were on the show. He wasn't like, who's the annoying kid?
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, it was good. For the first time.
Right,
it wasn't,
right.
You know, yeah. Once I started doing comedy is when I started making friends.
Right.
That's when I met people that were exactly like me. And most comics also have a pretty horrible past.
Of one kind or another.
Yeah, something's off.
But yours is very specific.
Yeah.
Like you're still going to trump everybody else.
Yeah, but comedians are so like, they'll be like, yeah, I understand.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
how
yeah,
they are. Yeah, 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 they'll be like, I'm going through this as well.
I get it.
So I immediately just like loved stand-up.
Well, how did it happen that you first did it?
I was on a basketball team. And
were you good?
I was good.
Yeah.
I was good. Not like great. Mm-hmm. I could hit three-pointers. And I could play defense. I couldn't dribble or like do anything super athletic.
You could shoot good though, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was like a stand-up competition in Staten Island at this place called the Looney Bin. The Looney Bin is a comedy club inside of a bowling alley.
I've done bowling alleys.
Next to a LA Fitness.
Oh, good. Perfect.
Yeah, and a Wendy's.
In
it's
a strip
in a
mall?
Parking lot. It's like, no, it's in a parking lot.
Okay.
And it's like, yeah. So,
yeah.
You know, the thing about that club is like when you're bombing, you just hear people
bowling
and getting like strikes. Yeah.
So like, who were the acts? Had you ever been there before?
I've never been there. I just went. My friends.
How old were you?
I was 16. And
your friends talk you into it?
The kids on my basketball team. These two kids that would like be mean to me in front of the team.
Yeah.
But then like when we were alone, they'd be like, "Hey man, you should do that stand up thing."
Yeah.
Like it was very weird,
yeah.
But I took it. So,
That's weird where you realize that some of the fucking shit talk is just sort of like, they still like you.
They still like me. Yeah, there was like, there was like, two kids on the team.
Yeah.
And there was one kid on my back. I played basketball my whole life until I was a junior in high school.
Uh-huh.
And this kid was always nice to me, and our parent was friends.
Yeah.
And we would hang out, but if we were ever in front of anybody, I would just get abused,
yeah,
for no reason.
And then afterwards, he'd be like, "Hey,
and
sorry,
buddy." Yeah, he'd be like, "Hey, man, you know I love you."
Yeah,
like,
right. Yeah. Yeah, but why don't you do that?
Why don't you tell them that you love me? I mean, you know, we hang out all the time.
Poor
man.
Guy.
Yeah,
you got beat up.
So bad.
You couldn't do nothing about it.
Now I find it funny,
right?
But like, it was pretty
hurtful.
Shitty. Yeah.
Well, I guess they just, I imagine like you must have been sort of like, you know, the effect of losing a parent and having that weird kind of need and vulnerability and like,
yeah.
You know, wanting to be friends with people.
Yeah. It's like, so, please, someone like me. Like, yeah.
Like me. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just like, please, I'm looking for any reassurance in anything, you know, and just Staten Island was the wrong place to be. At that time.
For that. It doesn't come in, there's not a billboard when you get up on the bridge that says Staten Island, home of supportive people.
Yeah. I was even kind of the odd man out at that camp.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Come on.
No. Okay.
Wait, were you?
No. I was like, maybe early on, but then like the first couple of days, but then eventually.
Well, I imagine it must have been interesting at the camp because you probably had, you know, the kids of public service people.
Yeah.
But also the kids of wealthy, you know, investors.
Yeah, like everybody.
The class diversity must have been profound.
But also everybody was from somewhere else but Staten Island, and they all seemed to have like friends at home and like stuff like this. So like it was all still.
You were there representing Staten Island.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah.
So, all right, so what do you do when you go do the comedy?
So I went there, and there was like six people in the audience, and I went on.
Six, that's good, that's safe.
6 to 8. Yeah. My mom was at the bar. I didn't let her come in.
Yeah.
And it went okay. It went okay.
Okay's good for 8.
Yeah.
You know, that's like 3 people laughing.
Yeah.
That's good. That's okay.
There was a couple people laughing.
What were you doing, jokes?
I was doing jokes about my dad, you know, I don't remember exactly what it was. I used to do this joke about I had a mongoose, and my mom said, I asked her if I can get a car, and she said I can get a mongoose,
uh-huh.
And I got all excited, and then I found out it was a bike. And I used to be like, you know, I'm 16, so, you know,
right.
I'm into cougars, you know, is there any like 20-year-olds in that?
Yeah. Oh,
you know,
yeah. Oh,
very
good.
Hacky.
No, but like it's good because you got the benefit of the doubt because you were a kid.
Yeah.
They weren't gonna be like your friends.
Right.
And
yeah.
Be assholes to you. They're at least gonna be like, oh, look at the kid trying to do something.
Yeah. The kid act worked until I was like 18.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it stopped, and then I actually had to start writing jokes.
Right.
Because I thought I would be able to like skate by and do this.
So right when you did it, you realized like this is it.
Yeah. I was like, this seems like a lot of fun. I would like to put as much effort and time into this as I can.
Yeah.
I stopped doing the basketball thing. After school every day, I would go to the city to do open mics.
You did?
For like 2-3 years.
Really? So so you're traveling in. Now, what was this stomach problem you had?
Oh, I have Crohn's.
That's all that's in the research. It's like his dad died on 9/11.
I have Crohn's.
He's got Crohn's disease and he's on SNL.
Yeah. Crohn's is that's a good bio.
Yeah, that's the bio.
Yeah. SNL's always the afterthought whenever anybody ever talks
to them. Right, 9/11.
9/11.
Crohn's.
Crappy tummy, and then 9/11.
And then Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
What the hell is that? I mean, I know one person maybe who had it.
It's like this disease where you shit all the time, and you lose a lot of weight, and you feel really sick, and your stomach always hurts.
Is it stress related, or is it disease, or what?
I am told I have a disease. I think stress makes it worse.
Sure.
But, you know, I got it when I was like maybe 16, 17.
Just out of nowhere.
Yeah, and it was really bad, maybe even younger. It was really bad for like 3 years until we stopped going to like Staten Island doctors, and like we went to this guy in the city and then immediately fixed it.
Really?
Yeah, immediately fixed.
Well, what were they doing on Staten Island?
I don't know. You know, I had people looking in my butthole all the time, like, you know, doing all this shit, and like nothing was working. I was just getting sicker and sicker. And then, you know,
like
I smoked a lot of weed and like tried to make it a little bit better. But then this guy and
Go to the city.
I got this thing called Remicade, which is an IV drip for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
And you just sit there and then you feel good for like a month or two and then you get another one.
Really?
Yeah.
So they, they were just sort of like, what is this?
I don't know what we're doing. Yeah.
Don't eat the whatever.
And my mom was a nurse, so she would be like, go to my friend. Go to this other friend.
This doctor, right.
You know, in Staten Island.
Yeah.
You know?
You would think it's so close to real medicine.
I know, there's real medicine a bridge away. It's like, it's crazy.
I think it's indicative of probably a bigger problem in the health services in terms of certain communities. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right. No, yeah. So, you know, if.
You got it under control.
We got it under control now.
Do you still do it?
Do I still do shit?
Yeah.
Do I still shit?
Yeah.
Well, now it used to be like 30, 40 times a day.
Come on.
Yeah, when it was at its peak.
Come on.
Yeah. My asshole just looks like a porn star's asshole. It's just like a gape.
Like always.
A lot of open. A lot of flow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for like 2-3 years, it would be like 40, you know,
oh my
it would,
God.
But it would be normal. It was to the point where it was normal.
That was just your life.
And now I go like once a day.
Oh, like a person.
Like a person.
No good.
And it is incredible.
I don't want to, I'm going to hurt some people's feelings out there who have Crohn's disease or, you know, twice a day people. Yeah, I don't
know. Sometimes twice.
Wow.
You know, most three, but wow. It's
and
a
you
treat.
Still do the treatment?
I still do the treatment.
It's good that they have something.
Yeah, it's incredible.
So now you're smoking weed, you're on an IV, you're going to the city.
Yeah.
To do stand-up. Where were you doing it?
I was doing a lot of like Lower East Side and comedy clubs.
Which one?
Like Eastville.
Oh, Eastville.
Broadway.
Eastville's like got the worst sound.
It is.
Like, it's a nice little room, but you like put a rug down.
But what it's
fucking tiles.
What's crazy is when you first start, every room is incredible.
Yeah.
You're like, this place exists and I get to perform
here. I'll go to Eastville like because it's around the corner from where I stay in New York. Sometimes I'll just drop in there. And like I went there like it was... it was the night before I did Carnegie Hall. I went in there with Nate Bargatze and tanked. I just bombed. And I was like, I needed this. This is good. I'm about to do Carnegie Hall tomorrow. I needed to be humbled by Eastville Comedy Club. Yeah, yeah. But it's like, it's one of those weird rooms where the sound just bounces around a bit.
Yeah.
But you were doing like the, but when did you get into the Cellar?
I got in at the Cellar.
Probably not till after SNL, right?
No, before.
Oh, good.
I got lucky.
Who championed you?
Who championed me?
Norton?
No, who was it? I think my agent did it at
really?
The time. Yeah.
And Esty just liked you.
I got very lucky. I think I was like 18 or 19.
She wouldn't let me into my HBO half hour. And even then, it was conditional. And I'm like 10 years in.
Yeah.
She's like, all right.
No, I hear stories of people that are like, it took me like 7. You know, I kind of just walk right in.
And then it was hit or miss there. Still, like, to the point where, like, I'm wary now.
Yeah.
To call in for spots. Because, and I told
you. You could just show up.
I think I can
you
now.
You can show up.
Yeah, I can
now.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But there was a period there, like, you know, after the podcast and after, like, you know, I'd done, you know, I was a known guy where I wouldn't put in. Because I didn't know, like, I forget which day to call. And I had this fear that I would be in New York for 2 days and I just want to sit there and, you know, eat the fucking, you know.
The wings up
the
there.
Wings and whatever. And the chicken skewers and just hang out with my friends and do like 7 spots over Friday and Saturday.
Right.
But my fear is I'd call up. She's going, I have the 1:30 on Friday. And I'm like, I can't do it.
I can't do it. It's too late.
Yeah. Well, I just
can't. Because the 1:30 doesn't really start till 2.
I know, but I just didn't want to be that guy. Like, you know, Saturday, Mark Cohen is in town and John Joseph is here. Is Attell has to do 9
and then
shows.
She'll see you when you haven't come by. She'll be like, why you now come by?
Yeah, yeah. Because you don't put me on. No, but I'm being mean. She, you know, she's gotten nicer.
She's the sweetest.
Yeah, yeah. She's and the place seems good. I don't think to put in there when I go. I should just go over and do a set.
Yeah.
I don't
just
know.
Just go over.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But you did a stand?
Did the stand for a while.
So what else was around? Stand Up New York. You were running around.
That
doing...
was like a big hike, though, for me.
Right, from Staten Island.
From Staten Island, you when you get in there, you're in like the financial district. So like going all the way up to 78. It's like, what the fuck?
So it was primarily the Cellar, Eastville, the Stand, and Boston.
The Cellar, not until I was like 18, 19.
So just
it was mostly bars.
Oh, really?
And like comics would have to like...
Oh, the comic shows.
Yeah, like comic shows. And then like, I did a couple bringer shows.
Ooh.
And then I kind of realized that like... those aren't really the way to go when you're trying to
work new material
or do stand-up at all.
Yeah, I know.
Because I didn't know 20 comics
waiting to get on.
I didn't know you became this guy that like, you know, they'll be like, oh, this guy could bring 20 people.
Oh,
so
yeah,
we're
that was
gonna
it.
Keep asking him to
yeah,
do
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And I was like, they want to book me.
Yeah, you're wearing out your friends.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, none of my friends come to this day because of the first year of stand-up. And I'm like, what you were watching was awful. There was nobody there. I was like, they're like, no, I'm not going.
You were doing
through.
The same jokes that didn't work the last time.
Yeah, they're like, I'm not doing that. Buying 2 drinks.
They won't even watch you on SNL. Can't do it.
No,
that's hilarious. So when did you finally start to kind of come into your own? When did you know? When did the Cellar happen? Who else? Who'd you start with? You got friends that came up the same time?
Jordan Rock.
Oh yeah.
Ricky Velez.
I don't know him.
Who else was kind of Soder?
Uh-huh.
Dan Soder.
Uh-huh.
He's like he's been doing it way longer than me and is a way better comic. But we all kind of started like popping off a little bit.
Isn't that nice when you find the dudes that you're hanging out with, you know, like the women, whatever, but with the people that are your generation.
Yeah, you have like your group of guys.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
The best.
Yeah, doing like open mics together.
Go
like,
eat.
Getting
in the
jealous
morning.
Of each other and stuff.
Good joke, asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Hey, you want a tag?
Yeah.
All right.
And then you like get mad if they give you a tag.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then if it's good,
you're
like,
fuck it. Can I use it?
Can I use it though? Yeah. And now you owe them one.
Yeah, tag. Yeah. I was never good at tags. I was like, if I ever suggested anything to anybody, it'd be the worst thing. Like, they'd go do it and just be like, "That." Not only did that bomb, but it made people unhappy. I'm like, I don't know. I thought it was funny. I guess I have a different way of doing it. So how does SNL happen? Are you working as a comic? Are you going out?
I was doing well getting spots. I would have like 5 on a Friday, 5 on a Saturday.
The Cellar. 4,
yeah. And then like 2 every day during the week. I was doing it every day.
Right.
And I was living.
Coming in from Staten Island?
Then I moved to Brooklyn Heights when I was like 17, 18.
Yeah.
And I went to college for a year.
Where?
At St. Francis.
Yeah.
In Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And then after like the second, my sophomore year, after like a semester, I just stopped because I got an MTV show.
Mm-hmm.
And
what show was that?
It was like Guy Code or something.
You know, how'd you get that? So you got an agent?
I got an agent and someone saw me opening for someone that was on the show.
Right.
And then they offered me, you know, and it wasn't like crazy. It was just like, I was like, I have to put all my effort into this right now and see if it could actually go anywhere.
Right.
And then if it doesn't, I could always.
What was that show?
It's just like Talking Head. You're just like in front of a green screen and there's like a hip hop beat and you're like, girls talking about crazy, you know?
Yeah.
You would hate it.
Yeah, I
know. I mean, I don't like it now.
I remember those Talking Head shows when I was coming up, I was already well into it, like on VH1, like the 80s,
right,
the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, the 70s, whatever it was, they just asked comics to work for nothing.
Yeah.
And you'd go
it's
up
like
there.
$300. You just go up there and just rant.
When you're sort of a comic and you have some talent and they don't know what to do with you, your manager always has you do like things like, well, you know, they want you to host these segments on VH1.
Right.
You know, and then you're there and they put you in clothes you don't want to wear. And you're like,
and they're all hip clothes.
Yeah. And you're doing like Tony Braxton's bio. And I'm like, what the fuck happened to me? You know, like, I can't, like, it's so embarrassing. But, you know, it all adds up.
Yeah.
I think I must have earned something.
Yeah. I'm very lucky that stuff didn't really happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you just got to be that talking head guy forever.
It's the advantage of being very young.
Yeah, but being also you're kind of a character. So, you know, you got to, you know, you're not just young, but, you know, you got your own, you know, groove.
Right.
You know, you're unique. So, all right. So you do the MTV thing.
I did that. And then I got, I met Nick Cannon and he signed me for a little bit.
Yeah.
And I used to open for him.
Yeah.
For like a year or two. And that was fun.
He signed you? What do you mean?
He was my manager.
He's a comic?
I don't, kind of. I mean, like, he's one of those guys that does everything.
Yeah.
And so whenever he decided to do stand-up, I would be his guy and I would help him, like, write stuff.
So he was your manager?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of.
So why did you decide to go with him? Just because of that resume?
Yeah, I was like 17, 18. I was, you know,
knew who
nobody,
he was?
Nobody was...
Right,
you know,
right.
Barking at my door or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just went with him, and he seemed like a really nice guy. And then I opened for him for like a year or two. And then I did his show Wildin' Out, which is like a hip-hop improv show, which was really uncomfortable for me. And it gives me chills whenever I hear Wildin' Out.
What did you have to do?
It's like dissing people,
uh-huh.
like rap style.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yo, your shirt is whack.
Yeah, yeah.
Motherfucker, you know, like, I bet your mom comes from so-and-so.
Yeah, did you write them or was it improv?
No, everybody would write them,
yeah.
You know, before the show.
Were you a rap fan? Were you a rap
kid? I love
kid?
Rap. I'm just not that guy.
Right.
I'm not like, yo, let me tell you something, you know? I'm really not that guy. And like, it was like embarrassing.
Yeah,
I felt really embarrassed.
Yeah.
And what sucked was they were all so excited and so good at it, the rest of the cast. And then I became friends with Amy Schumer.
Yeah.
And she gave me a tiny little part in Trainwreck.
Right.
And I met Bill Hader. And then Bill Hader seemed to like me from that.
What were you in Trainwreck? I saw it.
I was I was like laying on a bed in the hospital.
Oh,
they were
okay.
Like, what happened to you? And I was like, I tripped on a bong.
Yeah.
And I was like
yeah.
around athletes.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right.
And
right.
Yeah. So I guess he liked it. And then I got a call.
Bill did?
Yeah. I got a call from my team and they were like, hey, Bill Hader recommended you to Lorne Michaels for SNL.
Uh huh.
And I've never, that's something I never even like had a dream about because it's so not me.
Right.
Like, I don't know how to act or do characters or impressions.
Yeah.
I don't look like anybody.
Right.
I can only talk about my dick and my mom at this point. So I was like, I'm still at that point, by the way. I still don't have much to talk about. I haven't lived anything yet. And now I just work.
Yeah.
So I'm never going to experience life ever, which is a big fear of mine. Anyway, back to the story. You know, so I didn't think much of it. And then I auditioned, you know, I did stand up on a show where everybody did characters.
Yeah.
And
where
was
that?
It was, I think, at a UCB or something in the city.
Right.
And it went okay. And I was like, oh, maybe they'll like make a mistake and make me a writer. Them hiring me at all would be like probably a mistake for them. So I was like, you know, maybe I like could slide into the writer's room and like do a year and then get fired.
Right.
You know,
right.
I was like,
or quit, do a Hannibal.
I was like, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
So they called me in. Oh, I got a call back, and then you audition at
the studio.
At the studio.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm sure you know, is a dark room.
Yeah.
And they're in there, but they're not
laughing.
You
can't see them, and you're on the stage.
Yeah, it's quiet.
Yeah.
And you're just, you know, freestyling to a camera.
Yeah.
So I just did, like, stand-up again, and, you know, there was no laughter or anything very much, so I just, you know, walked out as soon.
Just kind of felt the weight of Lorne in the dark.
Yeah, I just felt like, okay, I didn't get this.
Yeah.
That's just what happened. I got to sit in somebody else's dressing room and look at how cool my life could be.
Yeah.
And I got to do that, and, you know, I was very, like, appreciative for even getting to do that.
Uh-huh.
And then I got a call again to meet with the writers. They were like, might want to make you a writer.
Yeah.
And I never saw SNL before. I still, to this point.
You still haven't watched it.
Now I kind of, now I know it, you know, but I never.
From the inside.
But before I got the show, I didn't know about it.
Really?
I didn't know what it was.
I love that.
Which is really bad to say, but, like, you know, I didn't grow up really watching it.
Yeah.
I watched, like, SpongeBob.
And, yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah,
you know, Drake and Josh.
Yeah.
You know, which is a Nickelodeon show. So, you know, I had to, like, come.
And you're, like, what, 19?
I'm like, 19. And my agents were like, you know, make sure you go in there and say, like, what your favorite stuff is from the show.
Yeah.
You know, for the writers. I'm meeting with the writers, and before I just YouTubed SNL.
Yeah.
And then I saw, like, all these, the Will Ferrell Jeopardy sketches.
Yeah.
I've seen all those on YouTube.
Right.
So I have seen the show.
Right.
I just didn't know because everything was on YouTube.
All right.
I just thought they were weird Will Ferrell sketches.
Right.
Online.
Yeah.
So I said those, and I said Sandler, everything he does. And then they were like, we'll get back to you.
Yeah.
And then I got called in to meet with Lorne.
Yeah.
And I go in there, and, you know.
Are you nervous? Do you feel the weight of it? Or it's still like SNL doesn't mean that much to you?
I didn't. It's not that I didn't mean it. It would be incredible. It's just I have no idea what any of this is.
Yeah.
This is all so crazy to me.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I'm just going to, like, you know, enjoy it. And then
right.
And I met with Lorne.
Are you high?
I was very,
When you went in?
I was high for every day. I was a high person
from
16 to 23 to like January.
To like January,
And now it's like occasionally or whatever. But so I, you know, I meet with him and then I don't know if it goes well.
What happens?
I sit down and, you know, he's there and he just starts talking to me about the show.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I don't really remember much of it.
Did he say, like, what he thought you might do or what you want? Did he ask you what you wanted to do?
He was kind of like, he was like, I think you're really funny. Yeah. I don't know if it works best for the show.
Right.
You know, you're very young.
Yeah.
You know, but I think you're really funny.
Yeah.
And that was it.
That was it.
That was it. And then I left. I didn't hear anything for a month.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. I said, I was like, thank you so much for the meeting. I was like, really appreciate meeting with you. This was, you know.
This was crazy.
This was crazy. Yeah. and then I got a call a month later and it was Lorne. He was like, hey, you got the show. I'll see you at work. I couldn't believe what was going on. It was all so ridiculous to
right,
me. Because you know, so I just assumed I was going to get fired at the end of the year. So I just figured I'd have a lot
so
of fun.
So you went to work.
I went to work.
And what'd you do? What'd they start you out with?
I got to do stand up on Update.
Oh yeah.
So I got to like talk about sucking dick.
Yeah. So they bring you out as you.
Yeah, they bring me out as me, my first thing. And the stand-up bit, I guess, went really well. And since then, I've remained on the show.
And you just sat there with, who was Update then?
It was Colin and Michael.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
okay.
That was the first year of it. So, and, you know, Lauren's been really great, and he's been really nice to me, and everybody's been super nice there, and I'm still there, luckily.
Yeah. Are you doing characters?
I don't know how to do them. I mean, like, if like, once in a while, there'll be, like, a guy that I look like, that they'll be like, you're him.
Right.
But, like, I'm not doing a good job at impersonating it at all.
Do you try to?
I do, but, like, it actually sounds worse than my regular voice, so I usually just, like...
Just do it?
I'm myself in everything, and I don't know how I'm still on the show.
Yeah.
But I'm very grateful.
So what are you doing out here?
I'm out here just doing some stand-up, and just my girlfriend lives here, and I like it here a lot.
You do?
Yeah. It's very relaxing.
Yeah? You find that you're relaxed?
I'm very relaxed.
What's going on with what we talked about? You know, the...
Oh, BPD?
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, I got, I went to, like, rehab in, like, December.
Now, what leads up to, we're talking about borderline personality disorder, right. And you know, if you don't want to talk about it, tell me. But
I can talk about it. Yeah,
because it's fascinating to me,
right?
Because it's like it's a really kind of mysterious diagnosis. It's hard to diagnose, and it's very, you know, very specific. And I've dated a couple of people. You know, one I know had BPD. The other one I'm sure, you know, doesn't think she does.
Right.
But it's a difficult diagnosis.
Yes.
And how did it manifest itself? How did you think you had it?
So I've been a pothead forever.
Yeah.
Right. And I started around October, I would say, September last year. I started having like these mental breakdowns where I would like freak out.
Like rage?
Rage. Like and then not remember what happened after.
Really?
Yeah.
So blind rage. What would spark it?
I don't even know.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I apparently, like, my girl, I was on the phone with her once, and then she like immediately was like, yeah, you just like snapped and like you like went
and
nuts.
You didn't know, no memory.
I had no memory of it.
Wow.
Like, and then like later on I would remember it like in pictures kind of, uh-huh. And like kind of remember it,
right.
Like in a fog.
Wow.
But like I wouldn't know what happened till after I broke something or after I came to.
Uh-huh.
So I was under the assumption that I was like, maybe it's the weed.
Yeah.
You know, I never really did any other drugs.
Right.
So I was like, I'm going to try and go to rehab, you know, my doctor.
For weed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, maybe that'll be helpful.
Yeah.
So I go, you know, and I get off weed and, you know, they told me they're like, you might be bipolar or whatever.
Right.
And
sure.
I was like, okay, so we're going to try you on these meds or whatever. And then I got out, and then I started smoking weed again, and
you're on meds.
And I'm on meds. So
yeah.
I was like, I was feeling a little better. So, you know, 2 months go by, and I just snapped. I was smoking weed every day. I just like snapped, and like I had a really bad mental breakdown. So I like freaked out, and I was like, it has to be weed.
Yeah.
I was like, this is what it has to be. So I like said, I'm like, I'm getting sober. I'm
yeah.
like, I was like, I'm quitting drugs. And I said, I quit drugs. And then like, I should have just kind of said, I'm quitting weed.
Yeah.
Because now people think I do drugs.
Right.
You know, so like, I'm very embarrassed at this point. And like,
did you tell the show?
I told the show, I was like, I'm quitting drugs. Like, I thought, everybody was telling me weed is a drug. You're a drug addict. You smoke weed all the time. And I was like, I guess I am a drug addict. You know, I'm very scared and I don't know what I have.
Mm-hmm.
This is like.
But you know, it's mental.
I know there's something wrong.
Yeah.
So 4 or 5 months go by of this happening. So I was like, I was like, I'm going to stop. I was like, you know, I'll do this.
Yeah.
And keep going to therapy. And then I didn't smoke or do, you know, drink or anything for like.
And you're off the psych meds?
For 3 months. No, I'm not still on them.
Mm-hmm.
I was on it for like 3 months. I didn't do anything. And I still felt the same. I still felt like something was fucked up and something was wrong. And I found out I have BPD, which is borderline personality disorder.
And who diagnosed that?
My psychiatrist,
uh-huh.
Therapist, psychiatrist,
yeah,
they're
yeah.
all the same.
Sure.
I don't know which one it is.
And that, and what, you know, what was the, what were the sort of like, how did he do the interview that led him to that conclusion?
He was always saying, like before this big meltdown
yeah.
happened, he was like, you know, you're probably bipolar or borderline. We just kind of have to figure it out. And then after that started happening, he was like, you're borderline. This
mm-hmm.
is what it is.
Because you don't have prolonged depression.
Yeah. She was like, I'm depressed all the time, but like,
right.
it whatever. They said they're really close and it doesn't really come out until this age.
Really?
They were like, this is the age where it kind of.
But now, am I wrong in thinking that borderline is behavioral and bipolar is actually chemical?
I think so. I'm not like exactly sure.
I don't know.
They're both
either.
So close, and they're what I'm being treated with is like called DBT skills.
Yeah,
which is dialectical behavior.
Yeah,
and they're both like this. They're treated kind of like the same.
So it's you're still on psych meds, and you
so,
do.
Yeah, I'm on new psych meds because it wasn't working. And I've been going to therapy every single.
What
day.
Are DBT things?
You know, just like a fear of it's like fear of abandonment.
Well, that's right. That's the big thing with
right.
the borderline.
Yeah. So, like, you learn Because I would always be like, I think everybody's mad at me. Everybody hates me. Like, I'm going to lose my friends. I'm going to lose my girlfriend. Like, my family hates me. And I would always just, like, be all around. I'd be worried all the time, and I'd be freaking out. And then this thing, this class, you know, teaches you how to use those skills and how to, like, be kind of independent.
Uh-huh.
Is, I guess, the word.
To sort of say, to realize that, like your thoughts aren't necessarily real.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's like steps to like thought processing. Like you have this thought, you have these feelings, you have these urges, you're going to freak out. Try waiting it out 10 minutes.
Right.
Try going for a walk.
What's DBT stand for?
Dialectical behavior therapy.
And is it working?
It is working, slowly but surely. Like I've been having a lot of problems. Like this whole year has been a fucking nightmare. Like
because of this.
This has been the worst year of my life. Like for, you know, getting diagnosed with this and trying to figure out how to learn with this and live with this and like just learning all about it and going to doctors nonstop. It's getting better, but it's like it's taking a while.
And you go to therapy, like talk therapy every week?
I go to talk therapy, and they also, I have like this book and we go over like skills. And,
no
like,
kidding.
How to implement them.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Do any of them track it to the loss of your dad?
Yeah. I mean, that's the big one. It was like, however I lived my childhood and, and fear and all of this stuff is related.
And also you were fundamentally, you know, violently abandoned.
Yeah. That's my big thing is trust. It's like, you know, one day he was here and then the next day, you know, they're gone. Like I have trouble when like, I used to have trouble when sometimes my mom would be like, I'm going out. You know, when people say they're leaving and coming back.
Yeah.
I get like a really big fear that they're not going to come back.
Well, I think isn't the prognosis pretty good, like especially if you're getting treatment? Like I know that borderline is difficult to treat, but some people actually grow out of it.
Yes, some people grow out of it and eventually don't need to do any of this stuff anymore. So that's like what I'm going to therapy with the hope of.
Isn't that fascinating though, in the way that like because you were conscious enough that you were 7 years old and you were emotionally attached and awake when that happened, when your father got killed, that, you know, that wired your brain.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the person I knew who had it also had loss in her life around that age.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just, you can't comprehend what happened, but you do know that, you know, people can leave or die in, you know, one day.
Right.
And that's that.
Yeah.
Wow. And is the talk therapy is helping you? What do you usually start with the day and figure and track your feeling?
It's day by day.
Right.
Cause like, you know, you could wake up a completely different person.
Yeah.
You know, and
just submerged in depression.
Yeah.
Self-hatred.
You just wake up and you're like, the world is coming in on you. And it's all about like getting out of that and using your tools.
Right.
And, like going through this book. Mm-hmm. And like, as like, it's so hard and like lame.
Yeah.
But like, once you like, you know, actually do it and go through the book and you're like, I'm going to use this skill or like hold ice is something or take a cold shower or listen to your favorite song really loud. It sounds fucking lame and annoying, but like when you do it, it actually kind of works.
Sure. Because like if you engage in those habits, that eventually the neural pathways.
Yeah, you trick your brain.
Yeah. And you do it enough.
Right.
It stays tricked.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you got to try to get your brain.
I have to convince myself I'm happy now.
Yeah.
Well, that's been like my goal.
Let's not go crazy. How about okay?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. I would love to be okay, Mark. That would be incredible. I just to be okay would be incredible.
Yeah. I know the feeling, man.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're doing all right. So do you, it's good that there's treatment and that you have support and you didn't blow up your relationship.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know how she's still with me. I mean, being in a relationship with someone, you know, like myself must be incredibly difficult.
But engaging.
Yeah. I mean, it's always exciting.
Hands on.
Yeah. She, you know, there's always something new for sure.
And sometimes like that, you know, for certain people, it's like, you know, what if their life's a little slow? You're like, they can always like, well, he's guaranteed to keep
me. He's a bundle of fun. Yeah. You're always on your toes.
So what happens now? When you go back to New York, you set up with people there, to therapists and stuff?
Yeah, I have another set over there. So whenever I'm here, I can do it here. And whenever I'm there, I can do it there.
And when do you go back? Are you going to go back to, when's the season start?
Season starts, like, I think September.
Or and
like
you're in?
September. I'm in. So I made it back. So, yeah.
So you're gonna figure out how to draw from the new diagnosis for your comedy.
Right. Well, I'm so happy. Like now that I know that something is, I always thought something was wrong.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then when you find out something is actually wrong, it's like very reassuring.
But it's weird because a lot of borderlines are very manipulative. and have very black and white thinking. Did you have that stuff?
Like, you know, I think the manipulation thing I definitely had, yeah, where I would try to make someone feel a certain type of way, and then if they felt that way, I would feel good.
Right, right.
But if they
right.
didn't feel that way, I would think something's wrong and that they're mad at me.
Oh, well,
so I would like, oh, I get, with yeah. words, I would yeah. like try and sway people into saying the exact thing that yeah, I needed yeah, to yeah. hear.
But when you say you fucking, hate me, you don't really mean that, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly. I'm like, you hate me, don't you? And she's like, well, I'm like, you don't, you know, it's always like whatever,
right, right.
whatever question I ask, I'm expecting the opposite answer.
Well, that's interesting. So like when, cause like now I'm just I'm doing self-therapy. So like when you're with somebody who loves you, you're right. like, you don't love me.
Yeah.
That thing.
And she'll be like, of course yeah, I do. And then I'm like, God, no, you don't. No, I know something's up. Yeah, I know yeah. something's wrong. And that could be very fucking frustrating for the other person.
Oh, you just drain them. They're exhausted.
They're just so strung out and tired of yeah. answering the same exact yeah, fucking yeah, yeah. questions.
You want to leave, right?
Yeah. You just want to pack up and get the fuck out of here, don't you? Yeah, you don't love me anymore.
And then when they finally break down, you're like, okay.
See, I knew it. Yeah, 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 yeah. As soon as they have a break, yeah.
Or else you're like, all right, sorry. Come on.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm being crazy. Yeah, I'm yeah. crazy. It's I have BPD. Yeah.
It's either I knew it or yeah. I'm okay. I'm yeah. being crazy. All right, don't go.
It's
don't
exactly go. What it's like.
Oh, I think I had it.
You had
I think I'm better, but yeah. I think I've avoided. All right. Well, that was helpful.
Yeah.
Well, it's great to talk to you, man, and I'm glad you're being proactive in all this shit, and have a good season.
Thank you, man. Yep. Thanks for having me.
Well, that was heavy but beautiful. A heavy but beautiful conversation with Pete Davidson. I was very happy to have hung out with him. We text occasionally. It's nice. Good kid, that kid. Okay. All right. I'm going to, I think I'll play some guitar. Yeah, I'm going to play some dirty. You guys like this dirty shit, and I think that's my oeuvre. That's my natural state. Greasy guitar playing. Hold on. Boomer lives!
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.